Hello and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show. This is Dr. Valerie Olmsted, naturopathic physician, and today we're going to be on part three, instructions for the suit, nutrition. And before we get started, let me do the usual disclaimer. This is not meant as personal medical advice, yada, yada, yada. Basically, use some common sense. If you are interested in something that I'll be speaking about, please go check it out with your physician. This is in no means any way for you to self-doctor, okay? So have some common sense. All right, take a deep breath. Now let it out. Now continue to breathe. Well, let me do that. We have a big job ahead of us when confronting nutrition. Consider that besides the basic nutrient requirements of the suit, there are many, many individual differences from one suit to another. Let's just jump in right now and talk about one of the biggest differences, allergies. Now, there are different uses of this term in that the medical field will use it to describe both mild and life-threatening allergies. Basically, when you have an allergy to something, your body reacts to it in a very uncomfortable way. The worst kind of allergy is known as anaphylactic. You might have heard of anaphylactic shock. This means that the substance has caused a massive histamine reaction, which makes you break out in hives, swell up, and not be able to breathe. It gets a little exciting. Such an allergy is life-threatening and requires immediate medical attention. This is what happens when you're allergic to bee stings or peanuts or strawberries or whatever. The standard treatment is epinephrine, also known as adrenaline, given by injection. Even if you think you're not allergic, it might be a good idea to carry some of that around with you. Why, you ask? I'm glad you asked that. Well, because you can become allergic to anything at any time. Let's say, for instance, that you have eaten peanuts all of your life and never had a problem with them. Nobody in your family has a problem with them. Now you're in your 50s and have been noticing more sinus allergies, foods bothering your stomach, and body discomfort. You don't notice that the peanuts seem to be doing anything. Heck, how could you? Then suddenly one day you eat a boatload of peanuts, break out in hives, and realize you can't breathe. You might recognize that as a life-threatening kind of allergy. You might not. Your life depends upon your recognition. When you have an anaphylactic reaction, you have less than 15 minutes to get it reversed. Epinephrine reverses it. Am I trying to scare you? Nope. Just hoping to provide some education that could save your life. You can get an EpiPen prescription from your doctor. The EpiPen is easy to use. You just jam it against your thigh and hit the button, and it does the injection in the properly measured dose. If you know you're allergic to something and don't carry epinephrine, ask yourself if you have a death wish. Seriously. And like I said, 15 minutes. Is all you've got. So if you are allergic, you need to be prepared. Okay, enough of the scary stuff. Let's go on to describe the other types of allergies. Lots of people have sinus allergies, food allergies, dust allergies, animal dander allergies, etc. Well, these allergies do cause a histamine response. It's not as severe, usually, and can usually be taken care of with botanicals or pharmaceuticals. Those kinds of allergies can improve with age or get worse, depending on how you treat your body. Remember, your suit is individual. The more specific food allergies are those that are lectin-binding problems. These occur at the blood level, and these are often not recognized as allergies. This is where the blood type diet comes in. If you've heard me speak before, you probably know that I am a great fan of that diet. You can pick up a copy of Live Right for Your Type by Peter Diadamo, ND, and find out more. The reason I love that particular diet is because it works for everyone, every time. I've never found another diet that does that. Now, when I say the word diet, I am not referring to that four-letter word that we hate that means restriction. I'm instead referring to a lifetime regimen of eating that is appropriate for your suit. Not something that is aimed at weight reduction specifically, but down the crosses, it's not the dreaded four-letter word, the word of war. The problem with lectins is that they ultimately cause inflammation at the vascular level, and that's very bad stuff. That means right down at your artery levels. And all foods have lectins. It's just that some lectins are not good for some blood types or cause increased binding of the other bad lectins. We aren't really going to get into that any further here. We'll save that for the blood type lectures, which I will be doing at some point. Whew, all that before we really get into nutrition. Am I crazy? This is a big subject, people. And I was just talking to a nutritionist and chef a couple hours ago, and she agreed this is a huge, huge subject. What I'm trying to do is get it down to easy bite-sized chunks for you to help you to understand a little bit more about your suit. Okay, are you starting to see how complicated the subject can become? When we talk about nutrition, there are two main distinctions I'd like to pursue here. Let's split it further into liquids or beverages and solids. Now, the reason I'd like to split it that way is that there are differences in digestion and assimilation, which we'll go into more in part four of instructions for the suit. How about we just start with liquids? Liquid nutrition, for our intents and purposes, let's call that anything that we drink, even though a lot of beverages could never be called nutrition. The most important fluid we drink is water, good water, that is. Since we are approximately 70% water, it really is important to be sure that's good water and not polluted water. Now, by polluted, I mean not only from chemicals, waste, or non-compatible life forms, but also radiation and thought forms. And if you think I got out there on that one, see Messages from Water by Dr. Masaru Emoto and Holodynamics by Dr. Vernon Wolf. We're talking quantum physics of water here. Water is the basis of all bodily fluids, and with a wave to Star Trek, we might be considered big, ugly bags of mostly water. I love that term. Since water goes into and through our tissues and cells, it might just be important to be sure it is pure, since whatever is in it might be dragged right along with it. The way to slow aging is to have your cell membranes fluid so the cell is free to move. If the water can't get in, or when it does, brings things that cause the cell to discharge more water than it's getting, you get deep down cellular dehydration, and that is not good for health. Talking about that reminds me of something that gave me one of those aha moments. There is a brand of water put out by a large soft drink company that seems to taste good. I enjoyed it when I first tried it. I started buying more and more of it. It seemed I couldn't get enough of it. Then I started noticing my lips were getting chapped as if I was dehydrated. Pretty soon my mouth was dry all the time, lips were getting worse, and I felt terrible. All that went away as soon as I stopped drinking that water. Do you think they put something in the water to cause people to crave it? Something makes you thirsty? I avoid that water like the plague now. The main secret to getting water into your cells is the surface tension. That's a scientific term relating to the water's ability to hold together. The less surface tension, the easier to enter the cells. Dr. Patrick Lanigan did research on that subject and created a product that does just that called Crystal Energy. RBC carries it now. That's Royal Body Care. And you can find them on the web. They carry spirulina and several other products also. And if you're using bottled water, please investigate it as much as possible. You need to determine the source, the mineral content, contaminants, and when possible, the life energy of the water. Life energy, you say? Dr. Emoto's group checked several of the more popular brands of water from around the world and found that some were contaminated well beyond the allowable limits. The most common contaminants were formaldehyde and acetaldehyde, which might have been derived from the bottling operation or from the water source. It was not known. Both chemicals are classified as carcinogens. Carcinogens, people. Formaldehyde and acetaldehyde. And you might be familiar with formaldehyde as that stuff that they put in your body when you die and preserves the body from rotting quite so quickly. Well, it kind of doesn't preserve us too well when it's inside the body when we're trying to be alive. There have been cases of fraud concerning bottled water also. In some cases, it was found that the company was simply using tap water and bottling it as mineral or spring water. How would it make you feel to know you just paid $1.99 for a small bottle of tap water from a polluted source? As in all things, it pays to do your research. From there, let's consider soda drinks. Do you know the constituents of that favorite beverage of so many people around the world? I, for one, was shocked when I read a book, Your Secret House, detailing some of the ingredients. Furniture polish, for one. That one is used to keep your bubbly drinks bubbly longer. How about phosphates? Hey, isn't that the stuff we're supposed to keep out of our laundry soap so we don't kill off the fish and plants? You can go to www.cspinet.org/liquidcandy. You will find not only the high fructose corn sugar problems, such as weight gain, diabetes, dental decay, but also osteoporosis, kidney stones, and excess calcium excretion. How does yellow number 5 promotes attention deficit hyperactivity disorder in children strike you? Let me read that again. Quote, yellow number 5, which is a food dye, promotes attention deficit hyperactivity disorder in children. I'll give you that address again, www.cspinet.org/liquidcandy. And liquid candy is all one word. There's another one at www.westonaprice.org/modernfood/soft.html. And that's westonaprice.org/modernfood/soft.html. You can find more scary facts about soda pop, including a statement that high fructose corn sugar can cause liver disease similar to alcohol. Similar to alcohol. That's cirrhosis of the liver, fatty liver syndrome, things like that. I'm shaking my head at this point. Did you know that many cases of gastric ulcers and GERD, or gastrointestinal reflux disease, otherwise known as a stomach ache in children, goes away when carbonated beverages are eliminated from the diet? How many stomach aches has your kid had lately? For those of you who grew up when I did, does this catchphrase, better living through modern chemistry, sound familiar? Better living for whom? I'd say it's certainly a better living for those who own the beverage companies and the dentist, hospital, psychologist, and all the stockholders, of course. Which brings us to aspartame, which is one of, or maybe the most reported complaint to the FDA. 79% of all complaints to the FDA are about aspartame. This stuff should never be heated, and yet it was approved for inclusion in baked goods. Quick, get out the binoculars, and you can see the FDA lackeys prostrating themselves, hands outstretched for green paper and gold to their gods Monsanto, DuPont, and Coca-Cola, to name a few. Remember the stories of how many drinkers went blind and died during Prohibition from drinking methanol? Did you know that aspartic acid, phenylalanine, and methanol are what make up aspartame? And did you know what happens to aspartame when heated? It becomes formaldehyde. Is this scaring anybody? It should. Bottom line, stop drinking carbonated beverages and don't ever put aspartame in your body. And the other name for aspartame is NutraSweet. I think it comes out under a couple other names, too. You can check that on the web. If you want to be really horrified, check out that second web address I gave you, westonaprice.org. They give you a list of things you can clean off with cola: blood, grease, solvents, windshield grime. And it also dissolves teeth, bones, all kinds of things. So you'll switch to fruit juice, you say. Not so fast, kid. Processed juices have loads of high fructose corn syrup in them, and things like citric acid, just like sodas. Often the drinks say added vitamin C. You know why they do that? It's because vitamin C is destroyed by heat, light, and air. It's also needed to help preserve the juice. With those bottles sitting out on well-lighted store shelves, I wonder how much vitamin C is actually left. Ditto for enzymes. Okay, you say, I'll buy bottled tea. That has to be safe, right? Nope. High fructose corn sugar, citric acid, etc., etc. Even the so-called healthy teas have that. I know. I've looked just for plain old tea lots of times and had to give up and just get bottled water. If you're wondering just what you are supposed to drink, join the crowd. Milk, you say? How about the reports that any stale, unbought milk is returned to the manufacturer and mixed into a huge vat, mixed with chemicals, and then repackaged? Is this true? I don't know, but I have heard it from numerous sources. Ew. Never mind that cow's milk is the wrong formulation for humans, and studies have linked milk drinking to heart disease. Don't think you're safe drinking beer either. After all, that's known as barley pop. And how about those coffee drinks and energy drinks? High fructose corn syrup, caffeine, artificial flavorings and colors, etc. If you're getting the picture that there pretty much isn't anything out there that's good for your body to drink, you've got the right picture. Even your water can be suspect. Be sure you investigate the company, especially if you're going to buy a lot of it. Even distilled water carries precautions. While it should be free of anything other than water, if you are drinking only distilled water, you may need to add minerals. If you forget this important step, you may cause osteoporosis because the body will leach minerals from the bone. I bet you'd like to know what I suggest to drink. Think about it. Think real hard. Did you guess water? Good water? Water that is not only as pure as you can get it, but has been subjected to, positive words and thoughts? If you did, you are definitely on the right track. At least start out with good water. Then, if you want to make coffee with it, or tea, or home-brewed stuff, go ahead. Water is so vitally important that there will be a show covering just that at a later date. Does that mean you should never drink anything else? No, of course not. First of all, I'm not interested in shooting all over you. Second, if you go out to eat at all, you will not be getting good water. You will be getting whatever they decide tastes better. How about fresh-squeezed vegetable juices? Keep in mind that most of them have to be consumed within 10 to 15 minutes, or you risk losing the enzymes that you are drinking the juice to get. Fresh juice is the best way to go to increase nutrition, especially in those who are too ill to digest normal food. There are many people out there who cannot even drink one mouthful of juice without vomiting. For those people, have them take a mouthful of fresh juice and chew on it for a few minutes, then spit it out. They will absorb enough nutrition that way that they are normally able to actually swallow the juice within a few days and to eat within a week. And I've tested this out many times on patients. Try it. And other than that, just keep your suit in good condition most of the time, when the odd times of eating out won't hurt so much. Speaking of which, maybe it's time to start considering the whole eating picture. Solid nutrition. Solid nutrition. Food. Stuff you chew up and swallow. That's what we're talking about here. I'd just like to warn you that this subject is so vast that there is no way we can cover it in just one show. Because of that, I will talk about the most simple nutritional stuff, the kind of stuff that can really help you. Have you seen the movie The Road to Wellville about Dr. John Harvey Kellogg? If you haven't, I suggest you do. It has a lot of good advice along with the laughs. There's even a song in there you can sing to yourself to remind yourself of the first very important part of digestion. Chew your food. Let me digress one moment here and speak to those who use the gulp and swallow method of eating. When you don't chew your food thoroughly, you don't give your body a chance to get it enough surface with digestive acids. Add to that what happens at middle age and older when your stomach acids decrease, and you might even see inadequate digestion. If you're familiar with colonic therapy and have either given or received one, you know that whatever you ate is not supposed to be recognizable when it comes out the tube. Now here's the gross part. I've seen quite a few people who are full of undigested supplements. I have also seen quite a few elderly people whose last meal is quite recognizable. One had whole baby carrots coming out. I asked her if she bothered to chew any of them. How the heck could you possibly expect to be nourished if your food hasn't even started to be digested by the time it's ready to exit? And, you know, you really shouldn't be able to recognize your food when it comes out the other end. We'll talk about that more during the next part of instructions for the suit, digestion and assimilation, next week. For our purposes here, let's just remember that food should be chewed before it is swallowed. To address nutrition in a more organized manner, how about if we break in categories? The way I'd like to separate food is by its normal classifications of fruit, vegetable, grains, meat, fats. This is because each type of food requires different types of enzymes to be digested. And I'm going to kind of lump the grains in with the vegetables because they can be considered that if you're doing sprouts. We'll talk about that in a little bit. So the first category is fruit. Fruit is generally classified as something that grows on a tree or bush, like apple, pear, orange, grapefruit, tangerine, berries, tomatoes, etc. Tomato, you say? Yep. Tomato is classified as a fruit, after much debate. Fruit is usually juicy, sweet, and is considered to be cleansing. It usually has a lot of fiber, which is considered to be good for us, like apple or grapefruit pectin, which is a very useful fiber for those with hypercholesterolemia or constipation. We usually think of fruit as providing us with vitamins B and C. There are other vitamins, depending on the fruit, as well as minerals, proteins, fat, such as an avocado, enzymes, and soluble or insoluble fibers. Fruit contains the equivalent of distilled water, the main difference being that it also contains minerals, which you will not find in distilled water unless they are added back after digestion. Think natural, the way humans were before better living through chemistry. Our water came with minerals. It did, really. Food came without chemicals manufactured by man, and we're talking pesticides and pollutants here. Did you know that pesticides are contained in the pulp? If you're using a juicer, like the centrifugal juicers most common on the market, you have little likelihood of getting the pulp. If you're using a juicer that includes the pulp, you need to use only organic fruits. And an example of that would be a Vitamix juicer. Now, fruit is required for a healthy suit. A larger amount is required for type A blood types as well as type AB. And we'll go into the blood type diet at another time. The reason we need fruit is not only for the vitamins, minerals, enzymes, etc., but also for the antioxidants. If you think about fruits and colors, that can give you an idea of the primary vitamin we're looking for. For instance, red and orange is usually vitamin C, yellow and green, vitamin Bs, blue and purple, anthocyanins. Maybe that is a little easier for you than trying to remember each fruit and what it contains. And there are several fruits from the Orient that are quite interesting. In their pulp, they actually have medicinal properties. And finally, we're getting these things over here, and you might have heard of them. They're usually multi-level companies, but really amazing stuff is being discovered in these fruits. There are further divisions based on types of enzymes required to digest the fruit, and I'm referring to food combining here. By the way, I was informed by a personal trainer that food combining is a bunch of nonsense, according to several experts in the medical field. This always makes me snort, since the experts involved are usually MDs who are generally not known for their knowledge of nutrition. All I can say to that is, you would be amazed at how easy it is to help people feel better and digest better by getting them to combine their foods properly. Now, if this was a bunch of nonsense, why does it work so well? I bet in most cases where it was tried by those experts, it would be found that they really didn't understand or practice it properly, nor did they ensure a good trial. You can't have people continuing to eat the same bad way and just combine a few things. It has to be all or nothing. Here's why. Different foods require different digestive enzymes. If you combine everything, the body tries to squeeze out the proper enzymes, which then cancel each other out, leaving you with little digestion and requiring your metabolic enzymes to be brought into play to do double duty. If your metabolic enzymes are busy digesting your food, your body is unable to use them for body processes. Anybody see a problem with that? Fruits are generally considered to take 1 to 2 hours to digest. It varies due to the type of fruit. For instance, sweet fruit should be eaten with other sweet fruit, sweet acidic with sweet acidic, sour with sour, starchy with starchy, etc. The exceptions are apples, pineapples, and papaya, which contain digestive enzymes which help to digest the other food. You wouldn't combine sweet with starchy fruit because you would risk creating alcohol, which causes auto-intoxication, otherwise known as gas and bloating, which can then give you one heck of a digestive headache. And I mean a real headache. We call it a digestive headache. But it's actually a headache, and it's a very strange thing. So when you start really cleaning up, you may experience this. Now let's go on to vegetables. Never met a vegetable you liked? Then I bet you're either suffering from a chronic disease or taking lots of supplements to make up for that erroneous attitude. No, that does not mean you can continue to eat poorly and just take supplements. See me rolling my eyes here. That's kind of like playing cancer roulette. How would you know you're getting the right amount of each nutrient for your particular suit and the circumstances it might find itself in? Most of the time, if someone is repulsed by vegetables, it's because their parents tried to force them to eat nasty, horribly prepared vegetables. I mean, just because you had a mom doesn't mean you had a mom who was a good cook. I offer my own mother as a for instance. Mom never met a piece of meat that she didn't like to have charcoal. I mean, we're talking no flavor but burnt. One of her favorite meals, which we got at least once a week, was the cheapest beef liver she could find, wrapped with whatever bacon was on sale that week and broiled into charcoal lumps. I'm willing to bet there are lots of people out there who are wrinkling their noses saying gross right now. And I bet the idea of liver or bacon or charcoal was bad enough, but all three together is a truly horrifying idea. Well, it was pretty awful. I'm here to tell you. I became a good cook just to save myself and my siblings from having to eat like that. Luckily, Dad was a good cook. He didn't cook as much as we'd like. He was pretty tired when he got home from work. We used to beg him, tears in our eyes, "Please, Dad, don't let Mom cook." To his credit, he would give a big sigh and get us to help prepare dinner. The other major problem we had to deal with was that some of our vegetables were cooked beyond recognition, like asparagus. Have you ever seen what asparagus becomes when overcooked? A slimy, gray-green, icky mess is what. Dad loved dead asparagus, Mom loved dead salads, and we lived through it anyway, somehow. Luckily, I grew up in California, so had ready access to fresh seafood and organic fruits and vegetables. So even though Mom was from the Midwest and had strange tastes, she was forced to give us plenty of fresh foods. Before we go further, let me point out that although technically corn and potatoes are classified as vegetables, they do not fit the bill for health. Corn is actually a grain, and potatoes are nightshade plants, which is bad for arthritis. Both are lacking in what we really need, green, leafy, fiber stuff loaded with vitamins, minerals, enzymes, etc. Yeah, I know, I can hear the gasps around the world now. Yes, they both have nutrients that we can survive on, as well as a high fiber content. Yes, they taste wonderful, and yes, they are a vital part of our history in many areas of the world. I have one word for you, diabetes. Before you tune out sputtering and muttering, let me suggest you tune in when I discuss the blood type diet. Then you'll better understand why I am not a fan of people considering these to be their mandatory servings of vegetables. By the way, let's talk about the food pyramid for a minute. You know that food pyramid the conventional food industry likes to fling out at us? Fling it back. It's a bunch of trash. It's guaranteed to make you slothful, obedient, and fat, just the way they like you to be. Oh yeah, and addicted to their processed foods. Find yourself a copy of the Natural Foods Nutritional Food Pyramid. You can usually find a copy of that at a health food store. I would go one further, though, and consider your blood type when deciding how to eat. Okay, back to vegetables. There are several classes of vegetables, just like there are in fruits. There are green leafies like lettuce, sprouts, beet greens, weeds, green fibrous, celery, green beans, peppers, starchy, squash, carrots, beets, corn, potatoes, legumes, which are the beans, crossovers, which are tomatoes and avocado. Now, these are not the official categories. These are the ones I think you might remember better. The colors of vegetables are everything but blue. The color tells you what the primary vitamins might be, like in fruits. Generally, you want a mix of yellow, orange, red, and green. The green leafies can be eaten with just about everything. The starchy ones should not be combined with anything but other starches and green leafies. Vegetables are our friends. Vegetables contain lots of fiber. This is a good thing. Not only are they filling, but they work to sweep the colon as they go through. This is a very good thing. Are you familiar with that book, Death Begins in the Colon? Reading that book will help you to understand why I stress this point. Get into the nutrients in my little friends, the vegetables. In the yellow starchy category, which would be corn, yellow squash, spaghetti squash, you get a lot of carbohydrates, and they tend to be very filling, especially when covered with butter. Yum. The yellow color can be from carotene, which is a precursor to vitamin A, as well as B vitamins, and also lutein and zeaxanthin. That's for eyes and kidneys, respectively. Orange starchy vegetables, which would be carrots, pumpkin, turban squash, yams, and sweet potatoes, are also very carbohydrate-rich and taste wonderful, loaded with sugar and butter, which just goes to show how dedicated we are to mucking up a perfectly good nutrient source. The color orange denotes vitamin C and carotene, among other things. For the green category, we have several categories available. In the green leafy category, we have lettuces, also known as weeds, peppers, spinach, cabbage, sprouts, herbs, dandelion, chard, broccoli, asparagus, celery, and many other things. In the starchy category, we have zucchini squash, summer squash, green beans, prickly pear. Green leafies can actually cause a problem with absorbing the minerals such as zinc, iron, calcium, and magnesium. The oxalic acid in them binds to those minerals and carries them out of the body. The main problem with that is if your calcium level is low to start with. Oxalic acid is also found in black tea, by the way, which could also be considered a green leafy. So you're supposed to be taking calcium of some source, you know, when you're eating the green leafies. Don't panic. There are quite a few nutrients found in green leafies, like magnesium, B vitamins, calcium, iron, and a bunch of other things, especially chlorophyll and omega-3 and 6 fatty acids. I guess we would put grains under the vegetable category for these purposes, since we have listed corn there. Grains also include rice, barley, oats, wheat, millet, quinoa, amaranth, etc. Grains contain phytic acid, which can also bind the calcium, magnesium, iron, and zinc minerals. Phytic acid is broken down by soaking, leavening, sprouting, or cooking over 180 degrees Fahrenheit. It's not all bad, however, unless you are already deficient in these minerals. Phytic acid also binds some heavy metals, such as lead and cadmium, and may protect teeth. Phytic acid is also contained by other high-fiber foods. For purple, we have eggplant, purple red leafies, like lettuce, purple cauliflower, purple potatoes. I haven't seen any blue vegetables that occur in nature. So the purples are anthocyanins. That's a major antioxidant and used a lot in anti-aging. Red vegetables are red bell pepper and other peppers, tomatoes. Yes, I know technically they are fruit, but we think of them as vegetables. Red lets us know the nutrient lycopene is in there. White vegetables are usually root vegetables like potatoes, onions, garlic, jicama, daikon radish, turnips, parsnips. And root vegetables tend to be high in carbohydrates as well as fiber. But several of them have very interesting medicinal qualities. For instance, turnips are high in inulin, which is good for diabetics. It's a slower sugar. Onions and garlic are high in organic sulfur, which is what the body uses to build tissues. Garlic is also known as nature's antibiotic, which has been discovered to be due to its high allicin content. Garlic was so valuable in ancient times, not only as a spice, but for its health-giving effects, that it was given as payment to laborers in the ancient world. Garlic is antibacterial, antiviral, and antifungal, as well as antitoxic. So next time you're around someone who stinks of garlic, just think of them as smart, not just stinky. Let's go on to fats now. The healthy fats are omega-3 and omega-6, and that's linolenic and linoleic acid. Omega-3s are found in fatty fish, like salmon, and omega-6s are found in grains, nuts, and vegetables. We need a balance of both. Nuts, legumes, and some vegetables contain a large amount of fat, but it's good. We call that monounsaturated, as opposed to what we get from animal products, which is saturated. Omega-6 is found in many nuts and seeds, such as sesame, soybean, corn, cottonseed, safflower, sunflower, wheat germ, avocado, evening primrose, black currant, olives, and borage. Omega-3 is found in fatty fish and flax oil. Actually, flax has both omega-3 and 6. Omega-3 is anti-inflammatory, so you see it given to people suffering from things like arthritis, Alzheimer's disease, diabetes, and pretty much any injury. Omega-3 can increase blood, so use it only with a doctor's advice if you have some kind of bleeding issue, and be careful you don't overdose on it. The other thing, too, is if you're going to use a high dose of omega-3, you need to make sure it comes from a really good source. The two labs that I know that remove most of the toxins are Sears Labs and Omega Labs. And what they typically do is they distill out from about 100 gallons of fish oil. They end up with 1 gallon. So it's a little bit more expensive than the cheapo brands. But you can take high doses of it because you're not worried about having the toxic elements like mercury building up. Okay, having the proper fats in the proper balance is important for several reasons. Beyond the cholesterol issue, which is, by the way, one of the biggest lies and travesties foisted upon the public, the right fat is vital to your health. In fact, your brain is made up of fat. So the next time someone calls you a fathead, say, thank you very much. Fat forms the insulating sheath around the nerves. Without it, the electrical conduction is short-circuited, as in the disease multiple sclerosis. Fat is what protects the internal organs of the suit from damage, as well as from sliding down due to gravity. Fat is not only the highest source of fuel for the body, but is also an excellent insulator to maintain metabolic temperature. And I don't know if I mentioned it in another show, but your enzymes have to be in a very narrow range of temperature. If you are below or above that range, it inactivates the enzymes, and pretty soon you go poof. So it's important to maintain your body temperature. Fat in your diet is what helps you absorb fat-soluble nutrients, such as vitamins A, D, E, and K. Did you know that the reason CoQ10 is found in oil capsules is to help it be better absorbed? Fat is involved in the transport across cell membranes for energy production, which is known as beta oxidation. This is one reason low-fat diets are not good for you. Now, a low-saturated fat diet is another matter. Fat is also responsible for the full feeling that we get that signals us to stop eating. Do you think the suit would be set up that way if we weren't supposed to have fat in our diets? Lest you think you can just run out and eat any fat you like, let me add a caution here. It must be balanced, like everything else, and must be the correct type of fat, unsaturated, monounsaturated, or polyunsaturated. Did you know that even fruits have fat in them? Avocados have 80% of their calories from fat. Cherries have 11%. Apricots and grapes have 8%. And kiwi, pineapple, and pears have 6%. Oats have 15% fat calories, or calories from fat. Quinoa has 13%. Corn has 10%. And whole wheat bread has 11%. Kind of makes you go, doesn't it? All right, on to meat. Okay. Let me define what I mean by meat. Here's my simple explanation. Are you ready? Write this down. If it has eyeballs and a mother, it's meat. I can't tell you how many people think only beef is meat. Every vegetarian can probably relate how little understanding people have of this concept. When I went through my vegetarian phase, people invariably said, oh, you're a vegetarian, but you eat chicken, right? Ay, ay, ay. What is it that is so hard to grasp about the concept of meat? Another way to look at it might be, and write this one down too, if someone had to chase it down and kill it, it's meat. Meat is muscle fiber. Let's not split fine hairs about organ meats, etc. Fish, fowl, mammal, reptile, insect, all are meat. Yes, insects too. In fact, they're really high in protein. Just because you can't see their little teeny-beeny muscles doesn't mean they don't have them. Look at what you're eating next time you have lobster, crab, or shrimp. Those are sea insects. Yeah, I know. Ew. They taste good, though, don't they? We eat meat because it has the highest amount of available protein, and we need protein to build our bodies. Actually, proteins are made of stuff called amino acids. These amino acids come from what are called polypeptides. While we're on the subject of proteins, let me mention that the prions you may have heard about in mad cow disease are proteins, abnormal proteins, diabolical proteins that act like viruses. They're ingested in contaminated meat products, absorbed into the bloodstream, go into nerve cells where they contact our own normal prions, and change them into the abnormal form, which then becomes basically an indestructible plaque that accumulates and causes spongy holes in the brain. Like I said, diabolical. One site I examined said, and I quote, early warnings, insomnia, memory loss, depression, anxiety, withdrawal, fearfulness, end quote. Great. Doesn't that just describe most of the people we know as well as ourselves? Anyway, back to protein, which we need. It doesn't have to be from meat. That's just the form most people use because it's the highest source of it. The main thing we need is the 8 essential amino acids, and there are 2 more of them in children. We need tryptophan, lysine, methionine, phenylalanine, threonine, valine, leucine, and isoleucine. And then in children, they need histidine and arginine also. You may have heard of vegetarians who had to be hospitalized due to improper diet. When that happens, it's usually because they ate the same thing every day and did not know enough to include foods that had all the essential amino acids. By the way, essential means we have to eat it because we are unable to synthesize it ourselves. Most of the indigenous peoples have a diet that includes those amino acids. Look at Native American and Mexican diets, rice, beans, and corn. These foods contain all the essential amino acids. Dairy. Oh, boy. Here's where I give you my big sigh. I love dairy, but it doesn't love me. Or rather, my suit has a problem with it. It's not just the lactose intolerant thing. I don't have a problem with that, although most adults do, unless they're blood type B or maybe AB. No, the problem I suffer is that I can feel my blood vessels responding to dairy. It's kind of hard to explain, but it's like a deep-down tightness and swelling. According to Dr. Diadamo, types O and A should pretty much never indulge in dairy. But I love cheese. You know that commercial for cheese where the little red-haired girl tells her parents she didn't leave cookies for Santa, she left cheese? All I can say is, Santa, I understand. Now, there are so many different types of cheeses and milk products. Milk, cream, sour cream, buttermilk, cheese, ricotta. And then they lump eggs in there. Eggs? I don't think so. Those belong under meat. They are protein, aren't they? They have eyeballs and a mother, don't they? Well, if they're fertile, they do anyway. The problem with dairy is that it was meant for baby animals of whatever species is giving the milk, not for humans, and certainly not for adult humans. There have been studies done that show that cow's milk is way too rich for humans and was meant for baby cows to develop strong muscles, etc. When given to humans, the problem becomes not only one of digestion, but also of heavy fat content. And since at least the 1950s or earlier, milk has been watered down and altered in so many ways that it is no longer milk as it was originally known. I can remember my dad complaining about that. My teacher used to say that all a human needs to be healthy is a cup of milk, 2 fruits, and a handful of cereal per day. I think he was a type A. Now, add a steak in there for me, I'd be happy. Those of you who are into yoga probably understand this better than most. The problem is we do not have unadulterated food anymore. At least most of us don't. If you are fortunate enough to live on an organic farm, you have the advantage over the rest of us. Now, as far as eggs go, I have seen too many people terrified of the cholesterol in eggs for no good reason. That's right, I said no good reason. The studies that the AMA likes to point to are bogus. I proved that myself many years ago and shocked the heck out of my physician when he routinely asked me about my diet, and I replied, oh, at least 3 dozen eggs a week, at least 16 ounces of steak daily, and I snack on roast beef sandwiches. Now, before you snort, after looking at my picture, let me tell you that I was in my 20s, and I was in perfect shape. I don't eat that way anymore for good reason. I am no longer doing the extreme physical exercise I was doing back then. Let me just say that the look on my doctor's face was priceless. He was struck speechless. When he could finally speak again, he informed me that I had the lowest cholesterol he had ever heard of, never mind seen. He just couldn't understand how that could be. If you follow the information on cholesterol, you will find that even if you don't supply the body with dietary cholesterol, it will still make it from whatever fats are available. This is because, drum roll, you have to have cholesterol to make your hormones. If you don't have enough fat or cholesterol, you won't have a proper hormone balance, and I guarantee you will feel the results. To stir things up a bit. Now, before you go out and tell everyone I said you could eat all the eggs and fat you want, let me rein you in. Come back here. I said nothing of the sort. What I said was that people don't understand the relationship of fats and cholesterol to health. One of the shows I will do will be on just cholesterol. Stay tuned for that one. Maybe we'll do that after Christmas. How about in January when people are feeling guilty? I'll explain that much better during that show. Well, the suit does need fats and cholesterol. There are variations that can make these things dangerous. I'm speaking of familial hypercholesterolemia. Yep, I paid a lot of money to be able to say them big words. One of the five types of hypercholesterolemia. Three of them are hereditary, which is genetic, and two are diet-related. It may be important to know which one you might have, which can be diagnosed with the apolipoprotein test. If you know you have a genetic tendency to produce too much cholesterol, then you know you will have to take something to lower the levels for the rest of your life. If it's dietary related, it's easy to fix that one. How about a few clinical case histories? I find this is at least the more interesting part. I'd like to talk to you about a few cases I've had in my practice to sort of bring home the importance of having the proper balance of nutrients in your diet. I'd also like to point out that the people who come to see me often have no idea what's going on with them. All they know is they just don't feel quite right. Or sometimes they have one or two complaints, but not the particular problem defined. In other words, the suit does not function as well as it used to and needs a tune-up. The first one I'd like to talk to you about is vitamin B deficiency. This is one of my favorite ones. I have more than a few of these vitamin B deficiency stories, but I'll tell you two of my favorites. The first one involves a very healthy man who exercises daily and rides his bicycle everywhere. He came in complaining of terrible dizziness to the point of falling over sometimes. He thought it had to do with receiving lidocaine injections when he got stitched up after injuries. But he refused to allow me to test for the one thing that points out that particular problem, saying that the Mayo Clinic had run every test known to man on him and everything came up negative. Since I couldn't run tests, I thought about what could cause such intense dizziness. I wondered, what would I do if I was a country doc in the old days and didn't have lab tests available? I considered the things that might cause his dizziness, and the easiest thing to do was a simple physical exam called the Romberg test. I did it, he was positive for it, and I diagnosed dorsal column syndrome, which can be caused by B vitamin deficiency. As I questioned him further, I found that even though he had an organic garden, he only ate whatever was in season, and he cooked everything. That means that his B vitamins were destroyed. So even though he was eating a pound or two of fresh-picked organic greens, the B vitamins were destroyed. I put him on a high-dose B vitamin for men with some extra vitamin B complex, and the dizziness went away immediately. He thought I was a genius. It reminded me to do the simple things first and never to assume that people know how to eat properly. My second favorite case was a woman who was being treated for cancer by a colleague who was a cancer specialist. She told me she was having panic attacks and dizziness. When questioned about her eating habits, it turned out that she had never seen a green vegetable that she liked or ate. When I remarked that she needed B vitamins after performing the Romberg test, she told me her cancer specialist said she could not take any B vitamins. A phone call to that person took care of that. He agreed she needed supplements, at least in the minimum amounts. Once supplemented with those vitamins, the panic attacks disappeared. Interesting, huh? Then I have vitamin and mineral deficiency. I had a mother who brought her teenage daughter to me, stating that the girl had not had her period yet. This girl had no sparkle in her eyes. The whites of her eyes were completely without shine, almost a yellow and thick. Her brown eyes, which were very dark, almost black, just looked dead. The family history showed that all the women on both sides of the family had started their menses before this particular patient. When questioned, it turned out that this young girl had never eaten fruits or vegetables, and I mean never. Her mother said she didn't like those things. I was amazed that a mother would allow such a thing. I wondered, how could that be? How could she have made it to the teenage years without the proper nutrition? Her blood type was O. That gave a clue. O's can survive as long as they have enough protein. She ate nothing but meat and bread. Therefore, she had plenty of protein and all of the required amino acids. She did not, however, have the nutrients required for hormonal health. Hormones are made from fat, cholesterol specifically, but they require several other things along the way, like vitamin A, B6, B-complex, vitamin E, omegas 3 and 6, tryptophan, tyrosine, zinc, magnesium, antioxidants, etc. The problem here is that many vitamins and minerals are required as cofactors to create enzymes, which convert substances into the required end products that work in the metabolism. If you are missing one or more, you may not be able to convert what you have into what you want. So her treatment consisted of intravenous vitamin mineral therapies twice weekly. She hated it. I commented that she should have thought about that before she decided not to eat fruits and vegetables. I also started her on spray vitamins that are 85% absorbed into the bloodstream. And the mother was instructed to include fruits and vegetables into the diet and to insist that she eat these things whether she liked them or not, or consider having to have intravenous treatments for the rest of her life. If you think my treatment's harsh, consider this. She was lucky to have lived to the ripe old age of 14. She said she wanted to have many children, but there's no way she could accomplish that with her chosen diet. By insisting that she change, like it or not, and giving her the nutrients necessary to help her suit be healthy, she was able to attain the goal. Her period started within a few months, and she was ecstatic. Even within a few weeks of treatment, her eyes began to sparkle, and she began to have enthusiasm for life again. This is a case where the simplistic view of nutrition was a shining example of truth. Okay, now we're going to get gross. Diarrhea. Yeah, I know. Ew. How could I even mention this? Here's why. Many people have either chronic diarrhea or chronic constipation, and both are fairly easy to get rid of. The diarrhea is a little more urgent, as potassium and sodium can be lost quickly and cause electrolyte imbalance. One lady came to me with a history of having diarrhea and itching for 2 years. She had a really bad type of tuberculosis, which had necessitated the removal of a third of a lung, and 14 years of really strong antibiotics and steroids. She was desperate, having had diarrhea and itching for over 2 years. She asked if there was anything I could do. Well, we got the diarrhea stopped within 3 days and then called it stopped 2 weeks later. The itching decreased immediately and finally vanished after a few months. Incidentally, her pulmonary nodules and bronchiectasis, which are thought to be incurable, vanished also. It's just a matter of proper nutrition. Another lady came to me with a history of fatigue and diarrhea. This is going to sound really simple, but here it is. I told her to stop drinking beer. The diarrhea ended. She couldn't believe it. I know it sounds crazy, but this is another example of how well the blood type diet works. She was a type O and was drinking beer just to keep her husband company. Beer is made from wheat and hops, which are allergens for type O. Stop the beer, the allergy stops. Diarrhea no more. Sounds simple, right? It is that simple. It cracks me up how simple it is. Now, I've got quite a few here for heart disease. There have been several cases of healed hearts in my practice, both from physical problems and emotional problems. We will address the physical ones today. One man in his 60s came in stating that he was dying of terminal heart disease. He pretty much wanted it to be over with, but his family wanted him to stick around. Just by changing his diet and having him take CoQ10 and alpha-lipoic acid and a few other supplements, he was doing so much better in just 1.5 weeks that his cardiologist called me up and said, "I don't know what you're doing, but keep it up. It's amazing." I don't know what happened to that guy. He fired me when I told him to stop eating chicken. Then again, he as much as told me he wanted to die. Guess I was messing up his plans by getting him back to a better state of function. A middle-aged mother of 8 kids had problems with the birth of her youngest child. She went into severe congestive heart failure. It was so bad, they told her they couldn't operate until she was in better condition, told her to go home and rest, and they'd replace all 4 of her heart valves in a month if she was better. So, with dietary changes and CoQ10, yep, that's all it took. 1 month later, she was so much improved, they decided they must have been wrong, and she didn't need surgery after all. In less than a year, her heart was totally healed, and she was fully insurable again. My own mother, who's now 86, owes her life to CoQ10 supplementation. She has coronary angiospasms from too many years of smoking 4 packs a day. She was having the spasms several times a day, each time requiring between 4 and 6 nitroglycerin tablets before she turned from gray to pink again. I suggested she start with CoQ10. Her response was, "It's too expensive." At that point, I asked her how expensive it was going to be to have the paramedics come out and try to resuscitate her. I bought her the CoQ10. She took 100 milligrams a day, and that was the end of using the nitroglycerin. The only time she took one after that was when I switched her from the 100 milligram capsule to a 60 milligram sublingual. I asked her how come she didn't just take another CoQ10. She stopped carrying nitroglycerin over 20 years ago, but she is never without her bottle of CoQ10. You're probably wondering what this CoQ10 stuff is. Your liver makes it from the food you eat, and as your liver function declines around age 30 or sooner, your ability to make CoQ10 declines. When your levels drop by 25%, chronic degenerative disease starts. When your levels drop by 75%, you're out of here. CoQ10 is required by your mitochondria to manufacture ATP, the energy molecule of the body. Your heart requires a lot of it. After all, you can rest most of your other muscles, but not your heart. It goes on beating day in, day out for your entire life. CoQ10 is required for your immune system, too, which is a huge energy consumer. That's why you get tired, you know, when you have the flu, because your immune system is working really hard, and it uses up a huge amount of energy. Another use of CoQ10 is in those people, mostly women, who have had heart damage from using fenfen. It may be expensive, but if it keeps you alive and off lots of expensive and toxic pharmaceuticals, it seems a better way to go, don't you think? Which brings up another issue, statin drugs. Statin drugs destroy CoQ10. I think it's the height of folly to take something that's going to guarantee heart problems when the reason you're taking it is to protect your arteries and heart from the dreaded cholesterol. What a load of crap has been foisted upon an unsuspecting public. But then there are plenty of lazy people out there who refuse to take care of themselves and would rather take pills than change anything in their lifestyle. It's all a choice. Which brings me to this. Life is all about choice. From the moment we get up to the moment we lay down to sleep, we choose every moment of our lives. When we first come to consciousness from sleep, we decide whether to open our eyes or not, whether to get out of bed or not, whether to eat, what to eat, what to wear, what to do, what to think, and what to say. If you think you have no choice, then those who say, "I have no choice, I have to go to work to do a job I hate," are not looking at the problem correctly. They need to go look in a mirror, point a finger at the one they see there, and realize that person is the one making the choices. If they are not doing a good job in that area, maybe it's time for a change. Think of it this way. You can choose not to go to work, but if you make that choice, there may be severe repercussions. You could lose your home, your possessions, your family. Ask any bum on the street. They made that choice. So if you choose not to work, what are you willing to choose next? Most of us choose to find another job, one better suited to us. If you have to move, well, then move. What about you start with choosing to nourish your suit with what it needs to function properly? How about fixing up your suit? Hey, how about appreciating your suit? If you do these things, you will have a much, much better life. It's your choice. Choose life. Choose health. And thanks for listening. This has been Part 3, Instructions for the Suit. Next week will be Part 4, Instructions for the Suit. And that's all on digestion and assimilation. Please join me then. And I hope that this has helped. and that you will now be healthier and happier. Thanks for listening.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.